Kentucky Derby future pools are back open starting February 7th through the 9th. Place your Derby future bets with Naira Bets and earn 10 times the reward points on all your Derby future wagers. New to Naira Bets? Not a problem. Sign up for Naira Bets today with the promo code MONEY20 and earn a $200 new member bonus. Join today at Naira Bets or via the Naira Bets app and use that promo code MONEY20 for your $200 bonus. That's MONEY20. With Naira Bets, you can bet any track, anywhere, at any time.
Here I am, in the city, with a fistful of dollars, and baby, you better believe
I'm back, back in the New York, New York, New York. I'm back, back in the New York, New York, New York.
Hello and welcome to the Naira Bets Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, very, very far from the Brooklyn Bunker. Today, I am out in the desert in Las Vegas here for the National Horse Players Championship. I will be gambling, though, as Steve Bick and I are covering these races. If you want to listen live, by the way, we will be on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, approximately 2 Eastern to 8 Pacific. You can listen through stevebick.com. He has a listen live link there. Going to be a lot of fun following along and betting. And the bet we're going to be talking about today on this show is the Cross Country Pick 5 hosted by Naira. And we chose to do this because it's some of the most interesting races in the country, including a very interesting Kentucky Derby prep in the Sam F. Davis from Tampa Bay. And to talk about this sequence with me and for you is our buddy Sean Borman. Sean, what's up, my man?
Not a lot, Pete. How are you?
Things are good. I imagine you're feeling a little bit of NHC envy. We've talked before with you about how you enjoy the horse player convention aspect of this event. Did you try much to qualify this year?
I tried a few times, not super seriously, but I definitely gave it a shot and just came up short. Couldn't get there.
How much will you pay attention to this? Will you have our broadcast on while you're throughout your betting day, or is it too much of a distraction and you'll just read the coverage later?
No, I plan on listening all the time, actually, because I really enjoyed last year's broadcast and found it very informative and entertaining. So I'm planning on listening all day.
Well, thank you for the kind words. And I don't remember, it was all such a blur. I don't remember much about it. This is going to sound egotistical. I don't mean it like that at all. I'm actually just looking for advice so we can do the best job possible over the course of the next 3 days. What's the good stuff? Like what should we be doing more of?
I just really enjoyed when you would grab, you know, players and sit them down and just go over strategies and talk about the races that are getting ready to go off and who they like in those races. It was just very entertaining, particularly the last day, you know, when you had some, you know, had the Matisse brothers on and JK and people that weren't still live, but were willing to sit there and discuss strategy for those that were alive. It was very entertaining.
That's always fun. Paul and Duke are so great at that. JK also has that club in his bag. For their sake, we'll hope they're all headed to the final table and won't be available for that color commentary duty, but that's good to know. And we'll try to get some guests during the first 2 days. It's much trickier, of course, because when everybody's in the hunt, you don't know if they have all their handicapping done, and I err on the side of not trying to bother somebody. But hopefully, surely, we'll find some players who have, you know, there's a big break between mandatories and they don't have an optional play for an hour. I'm sure they can come on and chat with us for 5 minutes. So that should be fun. Steve Bick does such a great job keeping the ball in the air for these shows and just allows me to chime in with the occasional color commentary. We had some good stories coming out of yesterday with the two reigning champions, Scott Coles from the NHC and Brad Anderson from the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, both winning extra seats at the Last Chance event. There was a good atmosphere in the room. I think it's going to be a lot more fun. Not that Treasure Island wasn't fun, but I think it's going to be a lot more fun with everybody in the room. It should be great, and I'm looking forward to betting some pick sequences myself, and I think I'm going to focus most of my action on Saturday betting-wise. I'm playing in the Charity Challenge, which will be fun, playing for our friends at the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation, of course, but I'll also be putting in a ticket, I think, for this cross-country pick 5.
It's not an easy sequence, and I would definitely want to get your thoughts to see if you can help me narrow some things down here. We start off at Aqueduct. It's Aqueduct's eighth race, and this one is scheduled to go at 4:25 Eastern. It's the Jimmy Winkfield, and it's a pretty interesting race. It's $100,000, 7 furlongs on the dirt, named for the great African-American jockey. I once had the pleasure many years ago to edit a book about Jimmy Winkfield, and I often think about Ed Hotelling, who wrote that book, who's unfortunately passed away, but he did a great job telling the Winkfield saga, and it's great to have a race commemorating him. I was hoping to get away with two against the field in this spot. I think Secret Rules might be the best speed, and if they go too fast, I think Montauk Traffic looks like the best closer, but I definitely want to pick your brain on this one before committing to any strategy. What are your thoughts, Sean?
Well, you know, I don't think you need me, because I see it almost exactly the same way. I think Secret Rules is definitely the speed of the speed, and he's going to put, I guess, the morning line favorite, Quixotic, in a pretty tough position chasing an actual speed horse. Now, he's gotten some pretty easy setups, shown a lot of talent, but he's never had to chase the speed that Secret Rules has, and that's going to put him under the gun. So I totally agree. I think Secret Rules and Montauk Traffic would be my two top choices. Maybe as a backup, I would use the one News to Me. And I guess after watching Manny down at Gulfstream last weekend, we know he's probably not going to send that horse. He's probably going to take back and try to get outside.
It does seem like a move he's been perfecting lately.
Yeah, he did it. He did it at Aqueduct yesterday, also, and won. So that's probably what he's going to do. So he might show a little more finish than he has in the past.
But that's interesting.
I see it the exact same way.
Yeah, I like that read from you. Do you like that ride for this horse?
Well, I tell you, I like it a lot better for this horse than I did last weekend.
Let's go on a tangent, actually. We talked on the other show. I don't know if you got to hear, but on Matt Bernier's debut on the network on Monday, we talked about the Tis the Law ride, and we all had various takes on it. Mine was basically, for the development of the horse, it might be a very good ride, but if I had bet on the horse, as I did, on the day, it definitely caused some moments of panic. It didn't give him the best shot to win on the day, I didn't think, but I still think it could be the best thing long-term for the horse. As a professional player, how did you see it?
Well, I really thought it was an awful ride. I thought, when you've got to, sitting on the back of that horse, going in the gate, you've got to think you're on the best horse, if you can handicap at all. And, you break sharp, you almost immediately a length clear that field. In my mind, the worst thing you can do is a quarter of a way around the first turn, just wrap up and get put in that position. He put himself in that position. And to me, I've heard, he was in that position at Churchill in the fall, and then he overreacted to that. But that was a scenario was totally different, because at Churchill he broke a step slow and he didn't make a conscious decision to get in that position. He just got in it, and it was a bad scenario and he had a bad trip. But last Saturday he consciously wanted to not go to the lead, and he put himself in that position. Paco didn't put him in that position. He did. That's how you get the best horse beat. Yeah.
Do you have any sympathy for the point of view? Do you have any sympathy for that point of view, that for in his long-term development, for the horse to be that willing to respond to the rider and to sort of learn that you can be in that position and not freak out and still produce a decent run in the lane, that might be helpful? Or do you not even buy that aspect of the argument?
No, I think it could be helpful. I don't know enough about horses and their connection with particular jockeys. You hear that certain horses and certain jockeys just sort of get along, and for whatever reason that is. So, in my mind, it could also be the case that if a horse likes a certain jockey and likes what they do, they could also dislike what they do. And now you've got two times in a row where that horse has been put in a really difficult position You know, it could hurt his progression too. You just don't know. But you know, the one thing you do know is you don't get in that position if you're loose on the lead. And that's the best trip in racing, especially if you're on the best horse. And if you're talking about Derby preps and Derby horses, what types of horses have been winning the Derby the last 6 to 8 years? It's tactical speed.
Yep. I take your point.
Not horses that are getting stuck behind. So yeah.
The idea, you could see it, it's like an old school idea that maybe made more sense in the pre-points era when you had the sprinters in there setting crazy paces and you got horses, best horse in the race like Point Given ends up getting cooked, chasing speed. You don't have speed like that now. And I take your point that maybe it's a thing that the trainer, and you know, I'm not second guessing the trainer. He knows a lot more about horses than me, but it just to bring it up as an interesting data point, you know, maybe he's thinking of that world as opposed to, as you pointed out, the way it's been the last 6 or 8 years when you know, the good speed horses have, I'll say, crossed the wire first to avoid any caught in a linguistic box with the maximum security situation. But you know, it's I don't think it's any accident that we're seeing these tactical best horses in the race doing a lot better the last 8 years in the point system than before then. Anyway, we'll know a lot more about Tis the Law's development as this season moves on. For now, I want to talk about three-year-old fillies, and to do that, we're going to move our tack to Tampa and talk about race number 9, the Suncoast Stakes, a mile and 40. How did you see this one, Sean?
I thought it was a very interesting race. I was going to land on two horses as A's in here. I sort of like 260, the three horse to be best of speed. And then I thought the 7, Blame Debbie, was tactical enough to sort of tuck in right behind the speed and get a really good trip. And if you've been watching Tampa the last 2 weeks, it's pretty biased to speed and sort of the middle paths of the racetrack. You don't really want to be buried on the rail and have speed, but if you can get in the 2 to 3 path and have some speed, you know, be loose on the lead or have tactical speed, it's a huge advantage right now, Tampa. And to me, those are the two horses I can take best advantage of that situation.
That's great info for sure. I was looking at Motu here as one that had numbers that fit with the field, especially if you project a little improvement for maturity since the last time we saw her. Seems versatile enough in terms of running style to get a good trip. What were your thoughts on her?
Yeah, she's one I'm going to use as a B. I would use her and We the Clouds, the two horses, as B's in there. Just as a backup, because my two A horses don't stand out on figures, so I definitely want to have a little more coverage, but yeah, she's a solid B for me.
All right, let's move on to our next race at Tampa. Great info there. Thank you for that note on the way the track's been playing. That's going to help a lot of people. Really appreciate you sharing that nugget with us. It won't apply in the Tampa Bay as we move to the green stuff going a mile and a 16th. And for me, there are two horses I'm a big fan of in here, and I'm going to have trouble getting away from them. Caribou Club, I feel like, is an underrated horse. Moved a little early into a hot pace last time. Should have plenty of pace in here as well. Maybe with the right timing, gets the job done. But I'm also very intrigued by March to the Arch, another obvious one, second off the layoff after a nice closing win in a race that Timeform US had coded with blue fractions. So I think I'm going to try those two and get out with those. Am I missing anything? Anything I should maybe think about putting in on the B line that I missed?
I had a little trouble with this race. It looks on paper to be a pretty fast pace to me.
Timeform
my pace projector. It does, okay. Yep. Mine just says it should be average. I think this is probably a case where mine is just wrong. But you know, it does seem like you always get somebody not sinned in these situations to just, you know, grab a hold and not really produce the pace that you want. But I was a little interested in using Hembree just because he's got an incredible finish and it's maker on the turf. And I would use Hembree definitely as a B. I think you're right about Caribou Club, and I think Jose Ortiz really fits him better because he's a horse that used to have pretty good finish and hasn't shown it the last few times where he's gotten a little too close to faster paces. I think Jose will get that straightened out and produce his regular finish. That's about all I've got in there. I just didn't see this race all that clear.
Yeah, real story might be worth talking about if it's not a fast pace. Would maybe be one I might nominate to be best of speed, but I'm not sure. What kind of trip do you think Real Story's going to get? Does Real Story have the ability to maybe bury the cheaper speed and still finish?
I sort of see him as being the best of the speed, but whether or not he can hold off some of these closers, I'm just not sure.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't convinced about.
I'm leaning towards no.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to fade and to hope to get away with it. Let's talk about the Triple Crown prep of the weekend. The Sam F. Davis, Grade 3, mile and a 16th, Independence Hall. I'll start with just an Independence Hall question. Did you have his figure 2 back as fast as some of the other figure makers I've seen, who, you know, including Andy Beyer, who had it as the fastest 2-year-old number run last year?
I didn't have it that fast. I had it fast. I gave him a 93 on my scale. But he's the horse in this entire sequence that makes me hesitant to really get involved, because I've got, he's been very impressive visually, but I've got his entire pace line tailing off on his last race.
I know you don't like that trend.
I hate it. Especially for a horse that's trying to go 2 turns the first time. That's just a real negative sign at even money.
They say he left some of his race in the paddock. There is a story, the narrative, and I know you like to fade the narratives, but and this might be a good situation to do it, because I actually don't really like the horse in this spot, weirdly, even though I still kind of have him on the radar. If he does rebound as one who's could end up being a serious player in the division, but the story is that he was acting up. And that was why it looked so grindy, and time-wise came back not as impressive. And then, we can see the work tab since, particularly that 5-furlong bullet. He could be heading back in the right direction, but I know from talking to you in the past, in this situation, when you have irrefutable data like what your pace line is telling you, you're going to want to listen to that more than anything about a workout or a story about acting up. I know you like to let the numbers speak.
I do, but there's that story, the fact that it was on a sort of a good track at Aqueduct, and in all honesty, Aqueduct has been really a strange racetrack this winter. Changes day to day and race to race, and I'm seeing a lot of evidence that some horses just don't like it, aren't getting over it a lot. And if that's the case, he's just going to bury this field. But I from a gambling standpoint, I don't want to hitch all my, money to this horse. But I also, I don't love anything else at a price in here to beat him. So, I don't want to go 3 deep in a race where I'm just going to take the 3 favorites. Because my other 2 alternatives would be the 1 and the 6. So it's just a very... It's probably a race to where I'm going to stay away, to be honest.
I, for my column that I'm writing about Triple Crown preps over at TheRaces.com, picked Soleil Volante in here. And it was just envisioning a scenario where Premier Star and Independence Hall hook up, and this one just gets a great run into the race. If you key off that race 2 back, I feel like Soleil Volante is not really that far behind these if the pace scenario gets very uncomfortable for the top 2 in the market. And I'm hoping for, that's a UK column, obviously. If they can lock in 8-1 and bet that each way, and this field holds together with 8 runners, you can get it maybe a quarter of the odds that Soleil Volante just has to hit the board. 2-1 on that, I think it would be a very good bet. And I think if the race falls apart, the horse could even win, and I will use in my multis. I take your point, though. It's not super exciting to play both Premier Star and Independence Hall. Who do you think will win the speed battle between those two?
Great question. I would lean Independence Hall. I would think even if he is tailing off in form, his finish is just so much better than Premier Stars. I would imagine he's going to come calling on the turn and probably go by and at least make things very difficult for Premier Stars.
I'll buy that.
You know, the way that track's been playing, it's, you know, that may be a lot harder said than done, honestly, because Premier Star is very talented, very fast, and he's going to be able to get right in that slot where speed's just been holding. So
it's a tough race. I think
it is a tough race. Yeah, it's a very tough race.
I might just have to use all three in combinations and just accept that that I might not be. It may be a survive in advance and hopefully Ajawi doesn't come and punch me in the face, but we'll see. We'll see. There's still some time. Maybe depending on how the track appears to be playing on the day. I mean, maybe the move is to fade Independence Hall in this spot completely, and then just accept it. You know, tip of the cap. Tip of the cap if the horse wins. I mean, from a value point of view in this pick, that's, as we talk about it even for another second, I'm realizing that's probably the way to go. I'm just not always so bold like that. I might want to have some ticket. Do you ever do that where you'll write up your tickets the way you want to write them up, and then maybe with a horse like Independence Hall, just come up with one saver where it's just your absolute top line to that horse to get your stake back? Do you think that's a long-term decent play in equity terms, or are you better off just fading and forgetting about it?
I'm a huge proponent of finding a way to get your stake back. So in that regard, I think it's smart, but I would really only do it if I didn't have a declining figure pattern on the horse. Mm-hmm. Now that is probably that, you know, that one piece of evidence would probably push me to just fade him and maybe bet a little less money than I planned on and just know, you know, I can bet a little to win a lot, as Paul Matisse likes to say, if that horse loses, and if he doesn't, just go on with life and take it.
Let's move on to the pay leg in the sequence. It's the King Cotton at Oaklawn, 6 furlongs on the dirt. How are we going to get paid, Sean?
It's another race where I don't love the 2 morning line favorites. I don't see, for a sprint race, a stakes sprint race, I don't see a ton of pace in here. So I think
agreed.
The horse I was the most interested in, especially to get paid, would be the 7 Tringali.
This was the horse that I came up with in here, who I was thinking could potentially be the best of speed.
Yeah, no, he figures to sit a really nice trip. If he doesn't make the lead, I think he's just a length off of it. He's, you know, turning back from a route to a sprint. His numbers are a little light, but just given the trip and my questions about the deep closing favorites, from a value standpoint, I think he makes sense as a definite use, but as a press also.
I'm with you. I don't know if this is good or bad coming up with the same horse. And I think that the morning line is probably a pretty good guess here, just because you've got super famous Whitmore in here, who, I mean, obviously is the class of the field, and a big run would be no surprise at all. But with a horse like Tringale as the key, to me, I could see maybe doing a saver one way, Whitmore over him if we're alive here in the 5th leg, or come up with some way of hedging like that. And I'm okay not putting him on the ticket. I don't know if that's smart or silly, but that was my gut looking through the sequence.
Yeah, I completely agree, because if I don't single the 7, I've got to use about 5 horses in this race. And there's a pretty good chance you use 5 horses and you get a 7-2 shot. Yep. Not the best scenario. So I think, you know, you could make a scenario, you can make a case to just live or die with the 7 in the picks and then come back with that exact saver move, or find some other way to get the bet back. If you are right that the 7 runs a big race, you can keep him in tries with some logical, something like that.
And if we're writing the bet that way, I think it makes, for me, I get that not for you with the declining pattern that you didn't like to see, but for me that makes including Independence Hall totally worth it, because I think the ticket's going to pay with a 15-1 morning line if we're singling that one on the end.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, excellent. Well, that was a lot of fun going through here. Where else will your attention be this weekend other than listening to the NHC and playing these tracks? Where else are you looking at?
I'm going to play a little Stronach 5 Friday afternoon. I'm going to definitely listen to you guys and keep up with the NHC. And you know, I think Oakland Park is playing better than any place in the country. So I'm just going to watch Oakland carefully and try to find some good plays there.
Well, Godspeed, my friend. Thank you so much for pinch hitting for JK. We were supposed to get to this show yesterday, but I'm glad the way it worked out. It was very fun getting a chance to talk with you and get your thoughts and insights on all this stuff. And you know how it goes, man. No good deed goes unpunished. We'll be bothering you again soon.
I like it. I enjoy doing it, so please do.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Naira Betts Show. I want to thank Sean Borman and our sponsors, Naira Betts. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening, making these shows so much fun to do. Believe it or not, we just debuted, we're about to debut the proper Matt Bernier show. We had the other new show this week. There's more in the pipeline, and just thanks to everybody for their support. We love to hear from you. Feel free to reach out on Twitter or over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Coatney, who's sitting on the bed over there here in the hotel. Our chief creative officer, Jonathan Kinchin, he is knee-deep in past performances at the moment. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.
I guess the Lord must be New York City. Well, here I am, Lord, knocking at your back door. Wonderful to be where I've always wanted to be. For the first time, I'll breathe free here in New York City.